The views and discussion expressed on this program do not necessarily represent those of the hosts of the program. WMKV, Maple Knoll Communities, WLHS, the Lakota Local School District, or staff and management. The information and advice presented are educational in nature and not intended to be taken as specific legal, accounting, or other professional advice. Always consult with your own legal, accounting, or other professional before making any investment. Welcome to Real Life Real Estate Investing, a show to help you gain financial freedom by investing in real estate. Brought to you by the Real Estate Investors Association of Cincinnati and the Ohio Real Estate Investors Association. You're listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing on WMKV, WLHS, and the Maple Knoll Radio Network. And now your host, Vina Jones Cox.
Good afternoon. I am Vina Jones Cox, and this is Real Life Real Estate Investing, where every week of every month of every year, effectively forever, we've been bringing you the information and inspiration you need.
Almost. Feels like it.
To start or grow your own real estate investing business. Well, we passed an anniversary in April. 28, I think. I think 1996, was 96 or 98. I'll have to go look at my records. It's been a long time. It's been a really long time. And I've had fun the whole time, ladies and gentlemen. And this is not an announcement of my retirement or impending death. I'm just saying, it's been a long time. So this week is question and answer week, which means that it is your opportunity to ask any question that has been bugging you over since last we met last month. You can call in your questions at 877-772-9658. Again, 877-772-9658. Or alternatively, you can also email them to our relatively new Gmail address, which I keep having to remind myself not to say the one that I've been saying for 25 years. It is now vinaradio@gmail.com. So V like in Victor, E-N-A, radio@gmail.com. Let me get that phone number again because I'm having actually having a little bit of trouble right now getting into my Vina Radio email address. So I suspect the first question that gets taken is going to be via phone at 877-772-9658. Cincinnati RIA has its very first meeting for the month of May tomorrow evening, Thursday night, here in Cincinnati, Westchester to be specific. It's a very special guest, someone who hasn't joined us at Cincinnati RIA for, I don't know, 6, 7 years, something like that. It's Mr. Landlord. Jeffrey Taylor's his real name, but everybody calls him Mr. Landlord. And if you don't know that name, you should. He's almost certainly the best known, possibly the most beloved speaker in the country on the topic of management techniques and rentals and getting good residents and keeping them forever and ever and ever. I secretly suspect he's the most beloved because he's also very engaging and really funny. So you can attend that meeting if you're here in the Cincinnati area. It's open to members and guests at no charge. We just, you know, have to get you to pre-register because he always packs the room and we're afraid of having to turn people away at the door if they're not pre-registered. That would be at CincinnatiRIA.com, CincinnatiREIA.com. They'll have the location, the schedule. Oh, the early meeting is best member recommended contractors. So it's folks sharing who their best contractors and suppliers are, which I know is super important to everybody right now. There's a real contractor shortage out in the world in a moment. Again, CincinnatiRIA.com. Also this Saturday and Sunday, Dwan and Bill and Will Twyford are going to be in town doing a two-day seminar sponsored by Cincinnati RIA on their very favorite topic, which is, of course, pre-foreclosures. How to find them, how to talk to the folks, how to navigate win-win deals, how to get the money to buy them, short sales, subject tos, all of that sort of stuff. There is a fee to attend, but it is just crazy cheap. And of course, Cincinnati RIA being a nonprofit organization, it's also, if you're not happy, it's fully refundable. So, again, CincinnatiRIA.com. If you want more information on that, there's also an option to attend that virtually if you're out of town and you want to simply watch it on Zoom. You can do that as well. All right, so we're going to go to a break while we figure out this email issue. If you have questions for Question and Answer Day, 877-772-9658 or VinaRadio@gmail.com. So off. There we go. Welcome to live radio. Yeah. So the microphone that I always use and was just using just like died. So next time we're you know saying, hey, it's Fun Drive week. Send some money. Cause Mike just had to change mics in a way that is it looks like a circus over here. Ah, there you go. It turns out it moves that direction. All right, so it's question and answer week here on Real Life Real Estate Investing, and that means we're open to all questions that you might have, assuming they're about real estate. 877-772-9658 is the phone number, or vinaradio@gmail.com, which I have successfully managed to log into on my new computer through a 9-step verification process, is where you can send an email. So first question that has come in is from somebody who has an email that starts with A-Y-E-R-S. So I'm thinking somebody named Ayers, perhaps. It says, when we have contracted with a seller for seller financing or lease purchase, $1 million price, and later the tenant buyer can only get an $800,000 appraisal, how do we remedy? Oh, it's Steve. It says, thanks, Steve. Yeah, I know. Is it me? Is it my magnetic personality destroying the electronic? I didn't touch it before. Although I am known for, like, when I touch things that are electronic, sometimes they just go kaput. So maybe it is me.
Oh, I got one more.
There's one more. And if this one goes bad, we've got, and then I could just switch into your seat, I guess. Yeah. So Steve, I'm gonna assume that this is not something that has actually happened to you, but is a theoretical question, because in the market as it has been over the course of the last 10 years, if you were pretty sure that property was worth $1 million when you bought it, it's probably actually worth more now than it was then. Nonetheless, this is a legit question, because this happened to me a number of times in the years, say 2007, 8, 9, 10, 11, where I had sold a property on lease option prior to the crash in real estate prices. So we had an agreed upon price, and then the tenant buyer went out to get financing and the appraisal came in lower than the agreed upon price, and in one case lower than what I owed on the property. So it does in fact happen, and you've got all kinds of options here, right? You don't control the real estate market. I mean, you do control whether the $1 million that you paid with to the or agreed to pay to the seller was the right price at the time or not, but you don't control whether the market goes down or interest rates go up or anything like that. And you don't really legally owe the buyer $1 million property. You just, you owe them a property if they can get financing for the amount that they've agreed to pay for it. But at the same time, there's options that you should think through should this situation ever arise in your real life. The option that I offered my buyer who got the $56,000 appraisal on the property on which I owed $80,000, For the first thing I did was I sat down with him and I said, look, appraisals are coming in even lower than market right now because banks aren't super excited about loaning money on real estate. And so the appraisals are coming in super duper conservative. And I just straight up think your appraisal is wrong. You know, here's some sales of substantially similar houses over the course of the last year that were in more of the $90,000 range that you agreed to pay. So given that is the case, one thing that you could do since you applied for an FHA loan is to ask for a second appraisal with a different appraiser because you might get a more fair appraisal. Second thing is, I am willing to allow you to continue to live in the property under the same rent terms, and we'll just try again in a few years when maybe the market isn't at the very bottom of the market. And the third thing that we can do is, if you just feel like this is no longer a deal you want, you can walk away. And that's the good thing about a lease option, is you don't have to buy the house if you decide you don't like it for some reason or another. There was another tenant buyer whose appraisal came in, it wasn't nearly that short. It was $7,000 or $10,000 short of what was needed. And I still believed that the property, the price I was asking for the house was the correct price. It was not, I hadn't like blown their heads off on the price or anything. And I said, well, what we can do is you can get another appraisal, or I'm willing to carry the rest of that money as a second mortgage after you've closed the first mortgage, and you can just pay it to me $100 a month for however long that takes, you know, 100 months or something. They declined both of those options and moved out and abandoned their option fee instead, which was sort of strange. I had a third scenario during that time where the appraisal truly was, like, the appraisal was right given the time frame. If they'd have waited 2 more years, it would have been way different. Or if they'd done it 2 years earlier, it would have been way different. And that was a property that I was kind of, you know, I'm not that anxious to hold on to this one under any circumstances. So I lowered the price down to what their appraisal was, because I could do that and still make some reasonable profit from the deal. So the contract says what it says, right? But with agreement with the buyer, you can make other arrangements should that come to pass. I suspect if I offered to pay a seller $1 million for a house, whether that was via a lease purchase or via seller financing, and an $800,000 appraisal came in on it, and I believe that to be a legitimate appraisal, I might be having a conversation with the seller that said, either the market has changed or apparently I was over-optimistic on the price. It just appraised at $800,000. How about I pay it off at $800,000 and then possibly just pass it straight through to the buyer? Take whatever profit I had made from the lease part of the lease option and let the buyer have their house. But, you know, appraisals aren't always like, they're not always things that you agree with, even when, and I'm not saying because I need it to be worth $1 million. I'm saying, like, you're seeing legitimate comps and you're like, what was this appraiser thinking? So possibly get a new appraisal, possibly talk to the seller and see if you can get a lower price, maybe. Possibly adjust the price for your buyer, possibly carry a second mortgage for the balance. There's a number of different things you could do. As long as you and the seller and maybe the seller and the buyer agree to it. So I hope that helps. And also I hope that never happens to you. And thank you for your question. You're listening to Question and Answer Week here on Real Life Real Estate Investing. Our number here in the studio is 877-772-9658. If you'd like to call in that question again, 877-772-9658. A question from Christine, who says, can you give any advice for targeting houses in A areas versus C areas? Would you recommend divorce leads? When you stack leads, there are just not as many in A areas. Okay, let me explain a little bit about the question. I'm throwing a jargon flag on myself for having read that email that way. A areas are your top-end luxury type, you know, great schools, lots of amenities types of properties. They're going to be in like the top 20% of house prices in your area, okay, where a C area is more of a rental, you know, it's a, like, it's more, C area is more rentals than it is homeowner occupied properties. So, but it's obviously an A would be two steps up from a C. And also the term stack leads that Christine used means I'm not just using a single list. I'm not just using the list of people who are out-of-state owners. I'm comparing that against people who are behind on their taxes, and anybody who appears on both lists is the person that I'm targeting. That's a stacked lead list, in case y'all didn't understand that. So, yes, Christine, it is the case that in A areas, you're just going to find less people that are in financial distress. You're going to find fewer foreclosures. You're going to find fewer back taxes. You're going to find fewer code violations. In general, absent some other problem, people in A areas can and want to keep their credit good, their taxes current, their properties properly maintained, all of those sorts of things. So that leaves us with the personal issues. If there aren't going to be big financial issues, it's not that there aren't financial issues in A areas, there are. It's that, yes, you're not going to see as high a percentage of them as you would in a B or C or D area. So divorces is a possibility. Another possibility is probate, because sadly, even in the top neighborhoods in the United States, people do die and they do lose loved ones. So probate is another possibility. Foreclosure, actually, depending on where you live in the country, and I believe you live in New York but are working in Columbus, Ohio, you're going to find foreclosures kind of more evenly spread out than they have been in the past. Now, Columbus, Ohio has the issue that an awful lot of people's property taxes doubled this year. 2x'd. The part of their mortgage payment that is taxes went up by 100% this year. Insurance is going up across the country, but in particular, areas that are coastal or near coastal are getting to the point where people are losing their homes, not over their mortgage payment hasn't gone up, but their insurance payment, from what I'm hearing, in some cases, has doubled and doubled again over the last 4 or 5 years. Not your particular area, but for folks who are in areas like that.
For people, yeah, that hurt my ears.
Sometimes I really wish we simulcast just so people could see, because I think they picture something different than what actually goes on here with people bumping their heads on the microphone and dogs running around. I mean, it's a fun place to be, ladies and gentlemen. Anyway, I would be looking for foreclosures in A areas, because older homeowners have had those homes for a long time might be in a position where they're going to lose them, not because of their mortgage payments, because of their tax and insurance payments. And if I was in a coastal area, I would be all over those A areas right now, because I'm hearing a lot of stories about people who can't afford their payment anymore, and they can't sell because their payment is at 3.5% and a new buyer's would be at 7% and also include the same really high taxes and insurance. So I guess my basic advice is look at probates. Yes, look at foreclosures in those areas. There probably aren't going to be a ton, but there will be some. Sure, divorce leads. Why not? And don't stack them. because the raw number of leads that you're going to find in A area is just way smaller than it's going to be in a B, C, or D area. So don't stack them. Reach out to everybody. All right, so we're going to take a quick break. It's question and answer week here on Real Life Real Estate, 877-772-9658. I'm going to say that slower. 877-772-9658 is the number to call. You can also reach out via email at vinaradio@gmail.com. Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing. I'm your host, Vina Jones-Cox. And today's question and answer day. And also, tech goes bad around Vina today. It's foam and fill. If you were a real estate investor, you would understand that the solution to everything is either foam and fill or WD-40. Those between those two things, they will fix everything. I'm not sure I would pour them into a electronic thing, but you know more about that than I do. Question and answer week. That means whatever questions you have about anything about real estate, you can send them in to vinaradio@gmail.com, or you can call 877-772-9658. Question from Larry, and this is actually about last week's show. He says, was the UBIT-UDFI discussion recorded? I heard most of it, but couldn't take notes. It was really good, and I'd like to listen and take notes. Well, I will pass it on to Scott and John that you really enjoyed their discussion. You can find all of the Real Life Real Estate shows, like going back, I don't even know how many years, at realliferealestate.com. realliferealestate.com. And if you don't see it right on the front page, you can actually search by topic, and it's really cool. Also, I believe it's on Spotify, if that's the thing that you use to get your podcasts. But realliferealestate.com will get you access to hundreds of programs. Email from Cynthia. Oh, okay. I know what this email is about. Cynthia sent me an email that says, I am interested in a course for learning more about this bank financing properties. And I just realized that she's referring to our show maybe April the 10th about that Robert Mohan did, the one where we were debating whether one should use banks as almost your exclusive source of financing. And I said, you know, Robert, you, it seems like there's a lot more to how you use the bank than there are to how most of us use the bank. Hey, who'd be interested in having a class about that? And she is responding to that. I did get about 50 responses to that saying, yes, we would be interested in hearing a class about that. And so we went ahead and booked it with Robert. It's May 11th. It's online. He's going to include his template for credibility package for a bank. And more importantly, he is going to include a spreadsheet that he uses to keep track of his assets so that he can literally on a moment's notice go apply with a bank. And that's why I'm going to it, because part of my issue with bank financing is the amount of time it takes to collect the data they want to apply. And he just has a running Excel spreadsheet with everything, like all the properties, all the other assets, who the mortgages are, what the loan numbers are, how long it's got to go, what the payments are. And it's an awesome template, and it's free with that class. So go to CincinnatiRIA.com, look at the calendar, May 11th. That's the day. I think it's $47 for members and $97 for non-members or something like that. And I already booked that one, Joanne, but thank you for your feedback. Let's go to line one and talk to Russ in Connecticut. Russ, welcome to Real Life.
Hey,
Real
Estate. How are you doing?
I'm doing great.
I thought it was a great point you just brought up, and everyone's probably thinking this. How to assist those with those who had higher taxes and higher insurance?
Mm-hmm. It's a national crisis, man. And I have heard very little rumblings from the government, who are usually very quick to want to use a sledgehammer and solve problems. And I'm just not hearing them say, well, maybe we should lower real estate taxes because it's making a lot of people who are older and on a fixed income or kind of economically on the edge lose their houses. And I'm sure not hearing them say anything about insurance. And I suspect the insurance problem is tied back to like the Bigger Waters Act, you know, because for years you didn't really get flood and storm insurance from insurance companies. You got it from FEMA.
Mm-hmm.
And it was badly underpriced, right? I mean, there was no way FEMA was collecting enough money to actually pay for the risks of a Hurricane Katrina or, you know, any major storm damage, but it kept insurance prices low because for-profit insurance companies didn't have to absorb those billion-dollar storm losses. Well,
right.
The Bigger Waters Act said we're not going to do that anymore. We're going to phase out this government-backed insurance. And at the time, I was like, you know what? That's right. People who own $700 million beach homes should not be subsidized by my tax dollars in Cincinnati, Ohio. But there's a lot of people who live in, you know, Alabama, Louisiana, Texas, Mississippi, even Florida, who don't have $700 million beach homes.
Mm-hmm.
They have $200,000 or $300,000 homes that, yes, they're on water, but it's, you know, they're not big, giant, grand houses. And it's those folks. I just had a conversation earlier this afternoon with a student who lives in Louisiana and is putting together a whole foreclosure rescue type company where they're going to do some financial coaching with people to just look at their finances and say, okay, I get it. Your insurance has gone from $200 a month to $470 a month, but let's see if, and that's keeping you from being able to make your payments, but let's see if there's $270 in your budget someplace that we could, uh-huh, that we could cut out and maybe bring that back to in alignment. And if they can't do that, she's going to offer to buy their house, right? I mean, that's the strategy is try to help these people where maybe they can get loan modifications that bring their interest rate down. And because all we're trying to, they qualified for a loan of X dollars a month, right? That was what their income allowed them to qualify for. And if they bought the property in the last 2 years, it hasn't appreciated a ton. I mean, it has some, but not so much that they could just sell it on the open market and capture enough to not be bringing money to the closing. And interest rates have doubled.
Mm-hmm.
So, which is why they haven't appreciated as much as they might normally. So, you know, I've talked to two folks in the last 3 days who are older people who are unable to afford their mortgage payments. And the first thing I said was, go to the bank, try to get a loan modification. Let's keep you in your house because you are going to be very, very, very sad if you have to go out into the market right now and rent. Because even though your house payment is more than is comfortable for you, it's better than rent's going to be on any kind of similar property. Yeah. So I don't know what the answer here is. I am still not in favor of spreading the risk that people take when they build their houses in. Most of these issues are not about tornadoes or earthquakes, right? They're about hurricanes. That's what most of these gigantic losses are about, where, you know, $10 billion happens in 2 days. It's about hurricanes. So I'm not in favor of subsidizing you up in Connecticut, you know, subsidizing people who have beach properties any place. But on the other hand, this is the big housing story right now, as far as I'm concerned. It's not the hedge funds. It's not the housing story is people can't afford their payments because their real estate taxes went way up because the county says, well, if your house got more valuable, you should give us more money. And because the insurance companies are, I think, struggling to find a place here where they can still make money and, you know, do what they said they would do for their stockholders and at the same time have policyholders who can afford the policy. I mean, it's a mess, and I don't know what to do with it. And I'm sure whatever the government comes up with will be the best possible solution. We'll completely solve the problem and we'll hurt the least number of people.
Right. Sure. Yeah.
Oh, you heard the sarcasm there?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, on a one-on-one basis, because that's how I always like to tell investors to solve things. If you see a problem, go out into the market and figure out a way to make money solving it. Would you be, let's say I'm a 75-year-old who's got a condo that I love and I never want to move out of it, and I am $100 a month short of being able to comfortably afford my payment, and therefore I'm probably going to lose the property. Would you be willing to get an option to buy my property with the option fee being $100 a month toward my mortgage payment for as long as I might live?
Possibly, yes.
Yeah.
Like,
see,
what you're saying, yeah.
Creative solutions.
Right.
You know, would you be willing to give me $10,000 for an option to buy my property so that I could pay my payments for the next 5 years with absolutely zero problem if you got to buy it at today's price when you did buy it?
Right.
I mean, there's solutions out there, but they have to be creative, and people get freaked out when they're like, why would I mean, basically what you're telling me to do is have a property that I don't control that has negative $100 a month cash flow. Well, don't think about it that way. If grandma has a $300,000 condo that you really like and would really like to own, and she would sign an option
right.
for you to buy it for $275,000 anytime in the next 10 years, but please don't exercise it until I die kind of agreement.
Mm-hmm.
And it only costs you $100 a month to control an ever increasing mm-hmm. amount of equity.
Right.
Would you do that? Right. You gotta think about not just like what's mm-hmm. going to happen to me this month and next month and the month after that, but what does that look like? I mean, it's $1,200 a year to control
right.
what right now is $25,000 in equity, and next year will hopefully be more, and then more, and then more, and you've got 10 years to buy it at that price. And one assumes that
mm-hmm.
since what you're basically doing is paying the option fee over a long period of time, that every time you pay the $100, what you owe on the house is $100 less.
Right.
We got to come up with individual creative solutions, and then we got to go out into the marketplace and let people know that they're available, right? And grandma might say, no, I don't want to do that. And that's fine. She's, you know, she can sell her property or whatever she wants to do, or lose it to foreclosure, or get some assistance or whatever. But, yeah, we got to come up with our answers to this thing and then go out into the market and see if the market wants it. Oh, and by the way,
yep.
if you didn't have that $100 a month, if you're like, well, I found somebody who would do that, but I'm not sure I can afford $100 a month, could you bring in a partner
mm-hmm.
who had bunches of money in their self-directed IRA or something and might say, oh, yeah, if she lives another 20 years, I'll be happy to do that every year for 20 years for 90%
mm-hmm.
of the deal? Because I'm taking on an unknown risk. So, Russ, you found it, so you deserve some of the deal. But,
there you go.
But, I mean, I could be paying $100
yeah.
a month for the next year or the next 5 years or 10 years or 20 years. Neither one of us knows this. So because I'm taking
right,
on the lion's share of the risk, I would like the lion's share of the deal. But now,
yep.
now you got a deal that you maybe couldn't afford to do on your own.
Got it. Okay.
So was that your only question, Russ?
Yeah, basically just how to really move forward on it and see it for the opportunity that it is, or see an opportunity out of it.
Yep.
Out of both of those.
Yeah,
so.
I keep telling people, if you really believe you make money solving problems.
Mm-hmm.
Go out and figure out a way to solve the problems. You don't sit around and wait for the government, who you don't like, up in your business to solve them. Go out and solve them and figure mm-hmm. out how to figure out how to do it in a way that makes money. And if you're going, oh, I don't really know how to do that, you know, you can go like talk to other investors and brainstorm about it and come up with stuff, right?
There we go. Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you for your call, Russ. All I appreciate right. it.
You're welcome. Thanks.
We're going to take a quick break. If you have any questions in here in the last 10 minutes of the show, just go ahead and send them to vinaradio@gmail.com. Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing. I'm your host, Vina Jones-Cox. It's question and answer week. Talking a weird amount about insurance today, but you know, it is a kind of a, I guess, unseen problem that is really causing foreclosures to spike more than they should, given that 80% of the country has interest rates under 4% right now. Maybe we should do an insurance show again and talk to somebody about what in the heck is going on and is there any end in sight? Because what I keep hearing, I've been hearing for the past year, just expect your insurance rates to continue to go up for the foreseeable future. And I don't know. I mean, this happens sometimes. There's expansions and contractions in the insurance business. And right now we are definitely in a contraction. I am even hearing lots of stories from folks, homeowners in those coastal areas, and also real estate investors saying, my insurance company just straight up dropped me. They just straight up said, nope, we're not doing insurance in your state anymore. We're not doing insurance on rental properties anymore, or we're not. And that's a weird thing for a company to do when what the way they make money is by taking in premiums to say, we don't want your premiums anymore. At any price is a strange thing for a company to do. So my feel is that they are, the insurance companies are, they're just not, they have not been able to sort through the actual risk numbers on which they base their premiums with the number of big name storms and whatnot we've had. And so eventually they will sort through those numbers. It will settle down to something. I know the state of Florida is considering a Florida state like subsidized insurance program for people who can't get it any other way. But I have to assume that the insurance companies will figure this out, and then maybe prices might come down because, you know, competition. When an insurance company, a big major national insurance company, pulls completely out of California or complete wildfires, that's another thing, pulls completely out of California or completely out of Florida, that doesn't leave that many standing. And the ones that are still standing can probably charge higher prices because that's how capitalism and competition work. Anyway, I have a question here from Sherry. She says, I'm a new investor. I want to purchase more properties and grow my investment portfolio. I'm debating on whether to take a second mortgage out on my rental. I owe $118. The after repaired value is $210. I could also sell this property to buy other properties to grow my portfolio. Do you hear that sound in there, Mike? That was Matt's head exploding when Sherry said, I'm going to sell my rental property and pay taxes and use the remaining money to buy more properties. I heard it. Maybe you didn't hear it. I'll clean up over in the break room later. My mortgage payment, including taxes and insurance, is $1,133. I have a 7% interest rate and a market rent of $1,700 a month. My current tenant's lease expires on June 30th. I'm also considering a job change to focus on real estate investing full time. So, Sherry, all jokes aside, selling this property is probably the worst of your options if you otherwise like this property. I mean, it seems like it's probably making money. You got a tenant, so I assume people actually want to rent it. I don't know if you're going to be able to raise the rent for the next tenant, but you know, maybe it could make even more money. The question is, how much money would it be making if you had more debt on it? And that's the math that you have to do. Because, okay, selling the property is only going to allow you to keep call it 80% of your net sale price. So you sell it for $210. It's going to cost you probably $15,000 in realtor fees, transfer taxes, all that sort of stuff to sell it. So now you're at $195. You owe $118, which tells me either you've owned it for a really long time or you are in a highly appreciating market. So now you're, after you pay off the loan, you're down to, what, $80,000 to go buy a new house with? Except the government's going to take 20% of the difference between that $195 and that $118, so you're going to have less money than that to go out to buy a house with. So borrowing money is much more tax efficient. The question is it efficient in terms of this property? Let's say that you could get a loan up to 80% of the ARV total between the two loans. So you think your house is going to appraise for $210. That means your total debt load could be $168. You got $118 for the first mortgage. So the second's going to be like $50,000. If you had an extra $50,000 in debt on that property, would it still cash flow? That's my question for you. Because you've got a 7% interest rate. Rather than get a second mortgage on an investment property, which is going to have a really high interest rate and payment, maybe you could just refinance the whole thing into a new first mortgage. Your interest rate is going to be about the same if you go conventional, maybe 7.5 instead of 7. You need to do that math and say, can this property still support itself with that much debt on it? I would rather see you borrow than sell, again, if you otherwise do like the property. But I think option number three is just go out and look for deals that don't require a bunch of cash. You know, owner finance deals, subject to's, lease options. If they need work too, you can borrow that money from a private lender or a partner. There's all sorts of ways. I think what you're thinking is I need this money because everything's going to be 20% down and I'm going to have to pay for my own repairs. And that's only true in the conventional finance world. It's not true in the creative finance world. So, yes, you've got some options. You're going to have to work some of them out on paper, on a spreadsheet to see if they are good options or not. But selling is probably not the best, not going to end up being the best one tax-wise or in terms of your future income and wealth. All right, we are out of time. I want to send out one more invitation to folks who are going to be in the Cincinnati area tomorrow night to attend Cincinnati RIA's in-person meeting in Westchester. Mr. Landlord Stars, you know, that's George's favorite real estate speaker. He was one of the first people I ever interviewed. And George was like, I love that Mr. Landlord. You can go to CincinnatiRIA.com. Tickets are free. We just need you to pre-register for that. We'll be back next week with more information to put you on the path to financial independence through real estate investing. Until then, happy investing.